provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about channel marketing in CW2324. Frenis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a shortcut straight into the heart of channel marketing, pulling back the curtain on the absolute latest insights from calendar weeks 23 and 24, straight from the practitioners and thought leaders who are actively shaping the B2B channel landscape right now.
That's right. For this deep dive, our mission is to distill the most impactful trends and practical takeaways from top LinkedIn discussions. We're moving beyond the buzz to show you what's genuinely resonating and what actions people are actually taking to drive real results in the channel.
Okay, let's unpack this. Thomas Allgaier's overarching summary of these 2 weeks really sets the stage for our conversation. He observed that ecosystem players spent the past 2 weeks doubling down on partner profitability levers, unlocking vendor funds, tightening enablement, and accelerating co-sell motions.
Right. And what's particularly insightful is his note that AI is transitioning from mere buzz to practical pilot programs, with strategic orchestration rather than simple automation emerging as the true differentiator for growth.
It's a powerful shift, isn't it?
It really is. This really highlights that companies are moving past the initial theoretical what if of AI.
Yeah.
They're asking the hard questions now. How are we actually making this work to boost profitability for our partners and, you know, for our own bottom line?
Exactly. It's less about just automating tasks.
Right. And more about designing intelligent workflows that genuinely enhance collaboration and outcomes.
Absolutely. And that really sets the tone for our first major theme, which is this persistent, almost urgent conversation around market development funds, or MDF. It seems despite their availability, many companies are still leaving significant money on the table. Here's where it gets really interesting for any business looking to accelerate growth.
It absolutely is. We're seeing recurring callouts that MDF from giants like AWS and Microsoft remains notoriously underclaimed.
Why do you think that is? Complexity?
Well, often, yeah. It's the perceived complexity in the application process, maybe a lack of clear ROI metrics, or simply partners prioritizing immediate direct sales over longer-term vendor-funded marketing stuff. Adriana Pricco, for instance, observed that, on average, partners only utilize about 60% of available MDF.
60%? Wow.
Think about that. 40% of potential growth capital is just sitting there, unused. Barbara Gorowski really reinforced this, stressing it's not your vendor's charity, urging businesses to adopt use-it-or-lose-it sprint plans to proactively utilize these funds.
That's a huge point about proactive use, because it's not just about spending it, but spending it wisely to drive actual customer adoption. Harry Blakemore provided a detailed list of what AWS MDF can actually fund, illustrating the breadth of possibilities.
That's quite broad.
Everything from co-branded campaigns to launching marketplace listings tied to go-to-market strategies, event sponsorships, sales material design, even GTM strategy and consulting support. The emphasis isn't just on getting a logo out there, but truly driving genuine customer engagement and adoption.
Exactly. And this ties directly into Sean Freeman's insight. He highlights that top-performing managed service providers, or MSPs, treat their vendors as strategic partners, not just mere suppliers.
Right, a different mindset.
Totally. They're engaging in co-building solutions, co-investing in market initiatives, and truly co-winning deals. Anna Cordova reinforces this point, stating that mutual investment is non-negotiable for these kinds of strategic partnerships to truly flourish. It's about shared risk and shared reward.
What's fascinating here is how these strategic relationships, fueled by concepts like mutual investment and MDF utilization, actually play out in real numbers. Can you give us a concrete example of this in action?
Certainly. Roman Kirsov shared a really compelling case study of Salesforce becoming AWS Marketplace's fastest growing ISV, that's an independent software vendor. They transacted an astounding $2 billion through AWS, tripling their year-on-year figures.
$2 billion. Through the marketplace.
Yep. It perfectly showcases how a deeply integrated, marketplace-aligned, go-to-market strategy can dramatically compress sales cycles and expand reach in a way traditional methods simply can't. It's a testament to the power of truly leveraging these channels rather than just viewing them as transactional routes.
So it raises an important question for us all.
Mm-hmm.
Are we fully capitalizing on these powerful channels, or are we still stuck in, you know, outdated ways of thinking about our partnerships?
That's the key question.
Yeah.
And building on that idea of strategic partnership, let's transition to our next crucial area, partner enablement. Despite its undeniable importance, many enablement efforts still seem to fall short of their true potential, It's a persistent challenge.
That's a huge point. Jasmine Maharizi really hit this home. She explained that most partner enablement content fails because it's far too product-heavy, generic, and frankly, too time-consuming for partners to actually use effectively.
Right, they just get overwhelmed.
Exactly. She advocates for a fundamentally different approach. Value-forward one-pagers that immediately address partner pain points, case studies that specifically show partner results, and their ROI.
A crucial difference there.
And modular assets they can easily remix for their own clients. It's about making the content truly work for them, not just presenting them with a fire hose of product specs.
And Christina Scott echoed that need for practical, usable content, adding that marketing enablement needs to be on equal footing with sales enablement.
Equal footing. Interesting. Why?
To ensure there's consistent, compelling value messaging across the entire buyer journey, from initial awareness right through to conversion. She even mentioned the concept of a new marketing marketplace specifically for partners.
Like a resource hub.
Kind of, but more dynamic. Imagine a platform where partners can access customizable campaign templates, localized assets, lead nurture sequences, demand gen tools, all often integrated directly with their CRM. It dramatically simplifies launching campaigns aligned with vendor strategy.
That makes sense. And Jeff Mesnick provided some compelling data that really underscores the power of organic reach and the need for simplified enablement. His research found that while centralized marketing brings in 40% of leads, an impressive 60% are actually driven by individuals within their own team and partner ecosystems.
60%.
Yeah. People in sales, engineering, executive roles. He calls these internal micro-influencers, and their credibility and direct reach are proving to be immensely powerful, making it critical that they are properly enabled.
Absolutely. And Christina Carstensen offered practical advice for H2 planning, emphasizing the value of hosting lunch and learn sessions for partners. These informal sessions allow partners to hear directly from internal experts, fostering deeper understanding and personal connections beyond just, you know, dry documentation.
Good idea. Building relationships.
Exactly. And Chang Tiong added a crucial reminder about the realities of channel communication. It takes at least 2 to 3 months to fully land in the field. Emphasizing the necessity of repetition and multiple touch points to ensure the message sticks and truly translates into action.
Yeah, you can't just say it once. Sandra Kahn called out a common misconception that seriously stalls success. The idea that partners don't need to be enabled with the same rigor as internal sales teams.
That's a trap.
Totally. This really brings home the idea that effective enablement isn't just about providing resources. It's about designing programs from the partner's perspective, focusing acutely on what's in it for them and how it directly helps their business grow. So if we accept this, what does this all mean for how we approach our partners and truly design for their success in a world where so much depends on mutual effort? Moving beyond individual enablement, let's shift gears to the bigger picture of co-selling and orchestrating entire ecosystems. This is where the magic, or, well, the mess, can truly happen if you're not careful.
Exactly. A significant challenge flagged by Arsh Lamba is the pervasive lack of visibility into partner performance. He emphasized the critical need for unified CRM layers and shared dashboards to gain true insights into deal influence and attribution.
You need that shared view.
Absolutely. Eva Fiemi reinforced this, stating clearly that the CRM is the foundation of successful partnerships when it comes to proving ROI. You simply can't manage what you can't measure, and this visibility gap is costing businesses.
And Kelly Sarabin framed effective co-sell execution as existential in an AI-crowded SaaS market. That's a strong statement.
It is, but probably accurate.
She argued that partners who can effectively streamline joint pipeline management, sharing data and processes seamlessly, are the ones who will significantly outpace their peers. It's no longer just a nice to have. In a highly competitive and increasingly AI-driven market, it's a fundamental requirement for survival and growth.
And getting that internal alignment is absolutely paramount to successful co-selling. Patrick M. Furtig shared a tough but invaluable lesson from his own experience. Many failed initiatives stem from a complete lack of internal buy-in and alignment. He stressed, no alignment, no partners, period.
Wow, period.
Yeah. And Elena Zapp echoed this sentiment, succinctly stating that silos kill partnerships. It really highlights that successful partnerships require an organizational-wide commitment, not just a dedicated partner team working in isolation. It's a complete GTM mindset shift.
That point about internal alignment raises an important question. How do you select the right partners when there's so much noise and so many potential avenues? Lindsay Riggs advises moving beyond just flashy logos. She suggests prioritizing partners who are actually influencing pipeline, who are easy to work with, and who genuinely align with your sales motion.
Makes sense. Quality over quantity.
Exactly. Anna Cordova further emphasized that the most impactful partnerships are built on mutual trust and a shared commitment, creating a foundation for true collaboration.
That brings us to how we measure these diverse relationships effectively. Freddie Mercado highlighted that a one-size-fits-all approach to key performance indicators, KPIs, not only falls short, but can actively harm partner engagement.
Harm engagement?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, if you're measuring a referral partner the same way you measure an MSP, their incentives are totally misaligned with the metrics. He strongly suggested tailoring metrics to distinct partner types like VARs, MSPs, and referral partners, explicitly warning against treating them like internal sales teams. Their motivations, operational models, outcomes, they're fundamentally different.
Okay, so your KPIs need to reflect that nuance.
Absolutely.
So what does it mean for how we measure overall success and true influence across these diverse ecosystems?
Yeah.
Rob Moyer's Partner Pulse survey found that most go-to-market and partner leaders, 45% specifically, view partner influence as messy.
Messy. That sums it up.
It indicates a real struggle with clear validation and attribution. Inbar Abergill and Kevin Edwards also challenged traditional attribution models, arguing that content, websites, and affiliate marketing provide significant, often unmeasured, branding value beyond just the last click.
Right, that top-of-funnel awareness that's hard to track directly to a sale, but still incredibly valuable.
Exactly. This hints at a broader, deeper impact that's currently being overlooked by traditional measurement frameworks.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, it becomes clear that partnerships need to be deeply embedded, not just an add-on function. Greg Portnoy shared how at Trintech, partner data is woven into every function's scorecard marketing, sales, customer success.
Every function?
Every function. This transforms partnerships into a thread running through the entire GTM motion, making everyone accountable and invested. Namrata Kapoor reinforced this, seeing partner marketing not as a separate function, but as core GTM infrastructure. It's about building a truly partner-first organization.
A fundamental shift.
Indeed. Now let's turn our attention to the role of AI in channel marketing. While there's been a massive amount of buzz, the conversation on LinkedIn during these weeks was definitely shifting to practical application and a healthy dose of reality.
Which is a welcome development, right?
Absolutely. That pragmatism is crucial.
Erica Hakenson offered a significant caution, stating directly that AI won't fix a broken marketing strategy.
So true.
She emphasized that success still hinges on clear objectives, a deep understanding of your audience, and disciplined execution. In fact, if your underlying strategy is weak or ill-defined, AI can actually accelerate confusion and magnify existing problems rather than solving them. It's a force multiplier, for better or worse.
That's a great way to put it, a force multiplier. Tricia Olson introduced an interesting concept called Generative Engine Optimization, or GEO.
GEO, like SEO, but for AI.
Kind of. For content discovery beyond traditional Google searches, specifically through large language models.
Yeah.
She noted that SME-led content, that subject matter expert-led content, along with comprehensive FAQs and a conversational tone, are proving particularly effective in getting content cited by AI.
Ah, so the AI engines pick up on that expertise in natural language.
Seems like it. It's a new frontier for visibility, demanding a different approach to content creation.
And Von Mordecai actually showcased a new AI avatar for sales demos.
An avatar? Really?
Yeah, highlighting how such tools could help simplify managing complex partner tech stacks by providing automated on-demand explanations and walkthroughs. Imagine the efficiency.
That could be huge for onboarding and enablement.
Definitely. And Daphne Van Zliet also pointed out AI everything and Copilot as key areas for Microsoft partners to focus on for future-proofing their businesses. It's all about adaptation and strategic adoption of these new capabilities.
And Lindsay Hoffman's key takeaway from PAX 8 Beyond 2025 was crystal clear and actionable. AI is no longer the future, it's the now. Start small, but start smart.
Start small, start smart. Good advice.
That really encapsulates the sentiment we're seeing across the channel, a move from experimentation to strategic implementation, even if it's in, you know, bite-sized pieces.
Right. Okay, so to wrap up our insights from these 2 weeks, let's quickly look at some of the new tools and programs that were launched and where the channel community is gathering to share and learn.
Sounds good. We saw Ansera roll out an upgraded social engagement platform, which Lauren Bermudez highlighted as simplifying content sharing for affiliates,
making it easier for them to amplify vendor messages.
Exactly. Dustin Howes announced Avastash version 2, promising faster AI-powered affiliate discovery and segmentation, a big step for affiliate marketers. And Ana Lucia Amaral unveiled Coro Compass, a new partner program specifically designed for simplicity and profitability, directly addressing some of those pain points we discussed earlier.
Good to see vendors responding. We also saw some valuable reports surface, providing crucial data. Rick McCutcheon highlighted a new partner benchmark report for the Microsoft ecosystem.
Ah, that'll be useful.
Aiming to provide data-driven insights into what's working and what's not. Lisa L. introduced the Canalys Top 100 Business SaaS Ecosystems Report, which ranks leading vendors based on revenue, ecosystem strength, and partner strategies.
A real goldmine for competitive analysis.
For sure. And Ty Radigan launched the inaugural Partnerships Job Market and Compensation Report, a valuable resource for anyone looking to understand career trends in this rapidly evolving space.
Definitely needed. And community events continue to underscore the growing momentum around trust-based ecosystems and platform interoperability. We saw mentions of Catalyst 25 in Seattle, PAX 8 Beyond 2025, various channel marketing association forums, and the Snowflake Summit. These gatherings are absolutely crucial for bringing partners, vendors, and leaders together for knowledge exchange, strategic discussions, and fostering that essential mutual trust that underpins truly successful channel programs.
It's where the real connections happen.
Precisely. So if you enjoyed this deep dive, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. You can also check out our other editions on field marketing, account-based marketing, AI and B2B, MarTech, and go-to-market strategy for more insights into the world of B2B marketing.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into channel marketing. It's abundantly clear that the future of B2B growth lies in strategic, well-enabled, and deeply integrated partnerships powered by smart orchestration.
Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss future insights.
We'll catch you on the next one.